There we go. I see live. Hey everyone, Dr. Scott Thor here with Juanita Webb and Justin Hebert. And today, as part of Bakersfield Mastermind, so just as a refresher, we've done a couple broadcasts here. This last week I talked on Tuesday, Juanita talked a week ago. So look for those recordings to catch up on the things we've talked about in the past. But what we're striving to do with Bakersfield Masterminds is to help business owners, leaders in business, to have an outlet to talk about their challenges and frustrations. Because if you're like us, small business owners, that old adage, it's lonely at the top, is true. You've got nobody to talk to about your challenges, because a lot of times your challenges are the people that work for you. And so we're striving to just create a community to have open, honest, private discussions to share our knowledge and to learn from others. And so today we're going to learn from Justin, and I'm going to let Juanita introduce Justin and get us started.
Well, I met Justin, I think it was probably about 8 or 9 months ago, and have just made a real connection with him and the things that he can provide as a resource to me, but also to others. And I've just been very impressed with my experience with him so far. And so let me tell you a little bit about Justin. He is an executive leadership coach, and he serves small business owners, entrepreneurs, and world changers of all types. He does help his clients remain focused on getting the right things done. And that's one of the things we're going to talk about today. He frees up his clients' schedules, which enables them to leave a legacy of influence and impact, which I think all of us want to do, right? We all want to leave a great legacy. And so Justin's going to give us some insights on that. He does work with his clients to set clear and meaningful goals, plan for strategic growth, eliminate overwhelm, and live fully abundant lives. And he's got a whole slew of degrees here after his name. He does have degrees from Tabor College, Fresno Pacific University. Yay, I was an adjunct professor there. And Bethel Seminary as well, where he got his doctorate. So he is also, and I appreciate this piece of it because I know how much effort it took for him to get it, is he has his SHRM certified professional HR credential. And so that's impressive because that really helps him understand the employee side of it as well. He says he's a checklist junkie, an avid Nebraska Cornhuskers fan. And I know that's why the two guys on either side of me here are they're cheering because they both are Nebraska Cornhuskers fans. So Scott or Justin, thanks for joining us and participating with us today. Yeah. Looking forward to hearing what you have to share with us.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here and share a little bit about my passion, and I get worked up, so I will try to control my energy today, but it's probably going to bleed through because I love talking this stuff.
Yeah, and Justin does have a lot of energy and enthusiasm. You can tell that it is his passion, and that's what's so exciting to be associated with him, because we each of us have a different passion and a different enthusiasm for different aspects, and I think that's what creates such a great synergy between the three of us, is that we bring such great differences to the table, and yet we're all workable together. So let's throw out the first question then. Let's put him on the hot seat and give him some challenge this morning. You know, people talk a lot about leaders getting the right things done. So what are some of the dangers of distraction or engaging in the wrong activities? And just by the way, for those of you who might tune in, we'll leave the question up there so you'll know what we're talking about as we go through the presentation this morning. So Justin, we'll throw it over to you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so this is one that really emerged out of my own life, right? And so I mentioned in my bio very intentionally that I'm a checklist junkie. And like I get like this insatiable high by being able to check lists off. And if I did something that wasn't on the list, I would go back and add it to the list just so I could cross it off. And eventually I found myself like I'd go home at the end of the day and, you know, I'm reflecting and I'm debriefing with my wife. And I just like, I got 30 things done today, but I don't know how many of them actually made a difference. Right. And so it really came to this crossroads for me where who cares if I'm getting 30 things done if one of them was of significance, right? That means I wasted my time on 29 other tasks that didn't need to be done. And so that really began this reflective process for me of what does it mean to not just get things done, right? I've never met a leader who kind of says, you know, I'm kind of bored. I wish I just had more things to do, right? Juanita, you and I were talking before we went live about, oh, I was supposed to be free this morning and now I'm not. And like, I've been on the phone. We don't have leaders as business owners, as executives, as entrepreneurs, as somebody trying to build a part-time business, like wherever you're at, I seriously doubt you're sitting there today saying, I wish I had a few more things to do. And so one of those focuses for me really became, how do we help people not just get more done, but make sure that they're getting the right things done? And so I really began that transformation in my own coaching process and mindset a couple of years ago, because some of those distractions, I mean, number one at the top of the list where I found myself was an unfulfilled life. Yeah, I got 30 things done, but I was largely unfulfilled in what I was doing. I was limiting not only my own growth, but the reality is limiting the growth of those around me as a business owner, as somebody that works in a team. If I'm taking on too much and it's the right thing, then my team can't be in the right place and can't experience wins. And so part of that distraction is that not only do I limit myself and limit my own joy, but then I start to have that ripple effect into those that are around me. And Scott made some of those connections for us on the Tuesday broadcast about finances and what it means to be connected and taken care of. And I have found that our checklists kind of do some of the same thing. And so the more that I am engaged in the wrong activities, the more likely it is that those around me are engaged in the wrong activities because they're picking up my mess or they're not engaged where they need to be spending their time because I'm doing their job for them. And so it really becomes about this honoring what are the values, what are the gifts, what are the talents that I have. One of the things we talk a lot about in coaching is you need to be doing the things that only you can be doing as the business owner. You have people on your team that can write an email or make a sales call or you know walk the retail store and help customers, but there are only things that you as the business owner can do and that you need to be crystal clear on what those are and then make sure you spend the vast majority of your time there because that's really what's going to create a culture that allows everybody to win.
I guess it helps if I take myself off mute. Great for sharing that, Justin. Appreciate the insights. All
right. Yeah. So our next question is good timing too, because 2021, the start of the year, people are setting goals. So what should leaders or business owners know about goal setting and achievement?
Yeah. The three big points that I think really matter. The first is to make sure you write them down. That I've met a number of people, hey, Scott, you have goals? Oh, yeah, I do. I don't know exactly what they are. And I'm like, okay, what are they? Well, my goal is to get, like, as soon as I start to actually press in, right, people expect me to say, it's kind of like, how you doing? I'm good. We expect the conversation to stop. If I say, what are your goals? And you tell me they're all in your head, as soon as I start to push in, the reality is you probably don't have that clear thought out goals. And so tip number one is to make sure you write them down. Tip number two is to just make sure they're clear. And this is, we actually spend 2 to 3 weeks on this in our first quarter together, anybody that I coach, because there's just a system and a formula to make sure that the process is clear. I have very little computer background, but when you are running these computer programs, you want one thing to happen that leads to another. And our goals, our brains are really wired the same way. When I perform this action, it needs to be tied to this habit or this end destination. And the clearer that we can get on that is something that's only going to serve us better because it's going to allow us to overcome those days where we just don't want to. I was facing that this morning. I did not want to work out. I was like, okay, what are the reasons I can't work out? And I came up with one. I was like, I don't want to. Well, that's not a good enough one. And because I was able to tie it to some of these larger objectives and goals that I have, I was able to push through the I just don't want to and go get a workout in. And then the third thing is really to just make it rewarding that we do ourselves a great disservice if we meet this goal and don't take time to celebrate. And celebration in reaching our goals doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to be elaborate or expensive. It just has to be meaningful. And so I've had clients that are like, if I meet my goal this week, I'm gonna quit work 30 minutes early and go get my favorite Starbucks drink. Great. Like if that's a meaningful reward, it cost you, well, $8. Starbucks is fairly expensive, right? But like, you're not out a lot of time. You're not out a lot of money. It just has to be meaningful, because the problem is, if you reach a goal and don't stop to acknowledge the work that you put in, and you just press into that next goal, eventually your brain realizes there's really no significance to accomplishing these goals, right? And so then this apathy, this kind of passive nature towards continued growth and self-improvement tends to fall away, because there's no motivation to continue to get better. We've told our brain, I'm going to accomplish this big goal, and when I do, it doesn't really mean anything. And your brain becomes very quick to check out. And so one of those important things that we work on is, make sure you write it down, make sure you make it clear, and then make sure you tie it to a reward that inspires you to want to continue to move into this process and the next journey and evolution of growth.
Well, and that, you know, that leads kind of into the next question as well, because, you know, all three of us do a lot of coaching for executives. You know, with each of our clients, we probably spend time, you know, coaching and giving insights to the executives about it. But from your perspective, Justin, as a, you know, a success and mindset coach, how do those two ideas take shape in that coaching relationship? How do you play that out for them?
Yeah, those are big. And quite honestly, those are the ones that I think I stumbled into last. And so when I started coaching, a bit of background, was right at the beginning of my doctoral program. I was in a church at the time. I was pastoring this turnaround church. We were kind of asking questions of, what does it look like for our church to change and be effective in this community? And you could look at the history of our church and realize there was quite a systemic problem of leadership burnout and pastors either leaving in conflict or leaving just because they got tired, and kind of the church was continually groping with the same questions. And so I started this journey into doctoral school, quite honestly, as like a, I'm 25 and have no idea what I'm doing and probably shouldn't be in this leadership position, and I need some help. And so then I started to look at, well, what is burnout and what leads to burnout and what causes burnout? How do we prevent it and how do we recover from it? And I built a coaching practice at the time that was exclusively focused on those sorts of issues with leaders. And in a wide variety of backgrounds and contexts, we just spent time, what does it mean for you to be healthy in all areas of your life? And, you know, as the story goes and the economy looks good and jobs abound, people become more interested in, how do I grow my business, or how do I tackle these HR issues? And it explains some of the later shifts that I've made to my practice. And 2020, 2021 has really kind of brought us back to where I started coaching like 7 years ago, of people just saying, I'm tired. I don't know that I want to do this anymore. How do I recover? And it began this connection for me of this idea of getting the right things done is in part tied to making sure our mind is engaged in the right way in the process. And so success, one of the great things that I tell all of my clients is, I get to be your success coach, but the good news is you get to define success. Like, I have zero preconceived notions of what it looks like for you to be successful. You get to define that. The thing that I'm going to do once you've defined that and we chart that journey together is, I'm going to help make sure you have the right mindset to get there. And so one of my favorite stories to tell about this is, I had a client a number of years ago who called me up and he said, all right, I want to work together. Just so you know, my job is great. My relationship with my spouse is great. I just don't feel like I'm a very good dad. So I want you to help me become a better, more engaged father. Great. Success is fairly clearly defined. We started this process of working together and unfolding some of these issues about, you know, why does he feel like he's disengaged and what's next in the process and how do we reassess? And all of a sudden, over the course of a couple of sessions together, he comes to this realization. He says, I've realized I'm actually a much better dad than I gave myself credit for. I'm disengaged because I hate my job. He was a executive officer. He had a C-suite at a oil business. And he, like, I go to work early, I stay late. By the time I get home, I want to invest in my kids and I just don't have the energy to do it. I've been chasing other people's dreams about trying to climb the corporate ladder and get as much money as I can, and I just don't want to do that anymore. And so he kind of wrote his exit strategy, and over the next quarter he enacted that and quit and took like a 3-month sabbatical where he was like Mr. Stay-at-Home Dad and attended every kid's baseball game. And right before we like finished that and wrapped up our time. He goes, hey, just so you know, I'm coming back from my 3-month sabbatical. I found the new job. It pays half of my old job, but I'm home every night for dinner and I've never been happier. And like it, that was the most fun process of self-discovery for him, but also for me just to get to see that unfolding, right? This idea of success changed from how high up the corporate ladder can I get? And all of a sudden he realized I'm at the top, I've got nowhere to go, and I don't really want to be here. And so then we fixed this mindset of what are these true values, right? We talk a lot about values in coaching. What are these values you want to honor that you want to pass on to your kids? And for him, catching baseball games was more important than catching private jets. And he radically made that change. And so success and mindset are intimately tied together. You can't have one without the other and experience real abundant joy in any area of life.
Yeah. Well, and I really appreciate something you said, Justin, if I can capitalize on it for a second, because I don't know about for you guys, but for me, when I'm coaching my clients, a lot of times some of the things that they say or that they share are kind of coaching me back, right? And I just recently, the people that I've done some coaching with said, well, you know, what we really need to get execs to focus on are their values. What are their life values and how are they accomplishing those every day in the work that they're doing? And so when I heard you say that about those weren't his values, that's not where he wanted to go, that really strikes a chord and people need to take a stronger look at can their values, the values that they hold dear to them, are those being supported in the work that they're doing? Because that's where that joy comes in. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And one of the fun things we do when I do team coaching or corporate development, those sorts of things, is we actually have a values activity that we work through, because I'm a firm believer, I hesitate to say all conflict, but a vast majority, if not all conflict, is, I believe, born through this belief that our values are getting trampled. Mm-hmm. And so if I value punctuality and my boss or my subordinate is perpetually 5 or 10 minutes late, to them it may not be a big deal, but to me, it's an issue of value, it's an issue of respect. If I value authenticity and I've got somebody who's like, you know, it's okay to cut some corners as long as the job, like, I don't want to be unethical, but as long as the job gets done, who cares if it's not perfect? But I value perfection. Then every time I sense that that person is cutting corners, we're going to build some strife and animosity. And so we really spend a lot of time like, you have to know these are my 5 non-negotiable values at home, at work, in life, with my friends, with my kids. And when these get trampled on, I need to know how to speak up because I need to mend that relationship. And so it really does a good job of giving teams language to say, hold on, I know you're seeing the world a different way. Can we please talk about this? Because I just had this, I've got like a worksheet of like 100 values on it and I allow you to just pick. And all of a sudden you have the language to help make your team stronger by honoring everybody's values and making sure we're all coming at this from the same direction.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's great material out there on that very concept. So yeah, I really appreciate the insight that you bring to that. So thanks. I appreciate that.
Yep.
Yeah. Our next question is another good timely question about habits. In fact, today I posted to my social media channels a quote from James Clear that he says the trajectory of your life bends in the direction of your habits. Mm-hmm. And just think about, you know, what new habits do you want to start this year in 2021? And I pose the question, like, where would you be today if you actually did what you said you were going to do at the beginning of 2020 or years prior? Like for me, I would be fluent in Spanish. I would have written 5 books. I would have read 1,000 books. You know, it's like, so what's the difference between a rut and a routine?
Yeah, the short answer is intention and destination, right? And so I grew up in Kansas. We had historical markers where wagon trains headed west still leave their mark in the Kansas prairie, right? You could drive by the road and you could look into a field and you would just see wagon ruts buried into the field, even 50, 100, 150 years after they were used. These things have still left an impression, and not always in a good way, because that spot of the field is unusable. And so a lot of times these ruts are self-limiting factors, right? It's whenever you hear somebody in a company, in a culture say, if they're asked, well, why do you do it this way? And their response is, we've always done it this way. That's a rut. right? It's this pre-foregone conclusion that this must be the way to do it because we've always done it. And so ruts, while they seem good, more likely than not end up getting us stuck, because any sort of inclement weather and those wagon wheels fall into that rut and they get stuck. Routines, while they may look similarly, are very much about intentionality and direction. I have a routine established every morning to make sure that I get my work done. And part of that means my alarm goes off at 4:15, and that by 4:30, I have had some water and I've brewed myself a cup of coffee and I'm sitting in my chair and I'm reading. And from 4:30 to 6, I read. But I don't just read random things, right? I'm not just like, oh, let me read this latest Facebooker. I have a plan set in place about what are the things that I want to get better at this year. And if I want to get better at public speaking, I need to actually be reading public speaking books. If I want to get better at balancing my budget, I need to be reading books on finance and marketing and whatever. And ruts just are this, hey, whatever kind of comes, I'm just going to fall into this and let life take me where it wants to. And routine to counter that is very intentional, very disciplined to say the end destination that I want to be in, right? I want to write those 5 books and be fluent in Spanish. Routines give us the framework by which we can go from where we're at to where we want to be, while at the same time countering some of those life uncertainties. COVID struck last year, and I actually read more books than I ever have before. Like, I found the ways in which not putting on 800 miles a week driving to see people actually gave me more time to get other projects done, right? And so the ability to have a routine that sets parameters but doesn't get me stuck in a preconceived way in which I think my business or my life has to work, while it gives me structure, also gives me the freedom to see what happens and adapt, whereas ruts don't do that.
Yeah. That's great clarification. Thanks. We all have routines, and sometimes we don't even realize that it is a routine. I'll give an example. I recently lost a piece of jewelry, and I was just like, okay, my best friend came over and she said, okay, well, we're going to walk back through what you do every morning. What did you do that morning when you think you lost it? And she made me walk through, and she go, okay, and you did that with your left hand. Is that what you usually do? Well, yeah, I guess. You know, but it was, we have these routines that we follow, but it made it very successful. And like you said, we get to the outcome, right? Because I found the piece of jewelry, so it was a good thing. Yep. And I followed that routine. So great. So for those of us who, you know, kind of get into a routine, and you mentioned this a little bit earlier about the checklist, because I've been a checklist person myself, or at least having to keep a list of things that I know need to get done. What are the dangers, you know, of checklists for those of us who are pretty high performing? We're, you know, pretty motivated, self-reliant. We get out there and we get a lot accomplished. What are the dangers of having that checklist for us?
Yeah. You know, I think in a roundabout way of, I've hit on this in a couple of these questions. And number one is you waste your time doing things that don't really matter. And number two is you can really get stuck in that rut instead of routine. Right. And so the dangers of checklists is that as you write everything out on a list, right, I grab the closest blank sheet of paper and my pen, and I just start writing, I need to walk the dog, I need to take my wife on a date, I need to pay the mortgage bill, I need to exercise, I need to call Jerry. I write out my list of 20 things to do for the day. The problem with a checklist is that all of those things end up looking visually the same, right? Our brain doesn't distinguish between what's at the top of the list and what's at the bottom of the list. And yet, as soon as I lean into that and say, okay, do all of these things really carry equal value? Well, if walking the dog carries equal value as taking my wife on a date, I'm going to get in trouble, right? Like, those things do not, in my personal life, carry the same weight. And the danger with checklists is that we can fall into this idea of, oh, as long as everything on the checklist is done, I've won for the day. And then it becomes, yep, yeah, oh, I told my wife I love her at the end of the day, I must have won today. But is that really all you want to communicate, is I said the phrase I love you? My guess is you want to do something else behind that. And so we really need to work hard at not just doing these checklists, right? Can I get everything on my list done today? But can I invest in things that bring me life, that bring me joy, that actually make a difference in the world? That if I, God forbid, didn't get 30 of these things done, if I only got 10 of them done, if I only got 5 of these things done, could I feel good about the five that I got done. And so one of the things we really work on in this coaching relationship is not just how do you separate big tasks from little tasks and structure your time appropriately, but how do you really then start to organize your time to make sure that you're freed to do those things? And so we talk about being in your core zone. What are the things you're both extraordinarily gifted at and extraordinarily passionate about? If you're good at it and you like doing it, you should spend most of your time doing those sorts of things. I'm a firm believer that leads to a great life. I'm happy when I do it and I feel like I'm really good at it. That's not a bad way to spend your time. And then maybe we've got this axis we work through, but maybe you're good at something but not very passionate. Or maybe you're not very good, but you are passionate. And these are areas where we can grow as people. Well, I'm not very good at social media, but I'm passionate about producing content for people. So what does it look like for me to get better at social media? The problem is, and this is where I think most checklists end up, is those areas of our time where we're not very good at things and not very passionate about it. And far too many of us spend our life in that section. Like, I don't care about the outcome and I don't feel like I'm like, I'll just, hey, it's tax season for business owners. I've been talking myself out of taxes for weeks now. Like, I'm not very good at it. I don't enjoy doing it. It's easy for me to kick that can down the road. And I need to take that step back and say, then maybe it's something I need to outsource, right? Maybe it's something that I can delegate to somebody else. And then as business owners, we talked about this earlier, because we've always done it this way, sometimes the best thing you can do for your checklist is just to delete items and see if anybody notices or cares. Hey, I'm going to stop planning the Christmas party. And if nobody complains, then we're done having Christmas parties. And you know what? Nobody complained. I get 20 hours of my December back not planning a Christmas party that nobody wants to go to, right? Sometimes just deleting, giving yourself permission to delete tasks is extraordinarily liberating and one of the best places to start.
If I can just ask kind of a follow-up question on that, how do you coach or advise leaders then to handle the tyranny of the urgent as compared to the pressure of the important?
Part of what we have to do is distinguish between, is this your urgent or is this my urgent, right? Like that you failing to anticipate this very obvious problem does not constitute an emergency on my end, right? So part of it is when you're the leader, everybody's got an emergency. Oh no, Susie called in sick. What are we going to do? Well, there should have been systems and processes in place to help that. So part of it is on the front side, we can mitigate some of that. The backside part of that, though, is that's the importance of having a good team in place. Mm-hmm. Because these are the things that happen in my core zone. So if it's legitimately an emergency and this is part of my core zone, I'm good at it and I'm passionate about it, I care about this outcome, then when it's truly an emergency, I can fit that into my schedule and say, I'll see this emergency through to completion. But the flip side is, hey, you know what? I was having a conversation with somebody yesterday. I said, the outcome of this has to look like I'm going to put something on your plate, and I understand that may feel overwhelming. I'm going to follow up with you in 2 days and see how you're handling this new transition, and I will coach you from there to get to the destination we want to go to. And so what it does is by putting that proper team in place, it gives us as the leader the freedom to say, Juanita, I'm going to trust you to rise to the occasion. I feel like I've invested in you. We've put you in a position to win. This is your chance to show me. I understand you still might feel overwhelmed, but I'll follow up in 2 days. And any questions you have, I can help you handle that. And really kind of trusting this systems building process to bring our employees to their full potential helps mitigate a lot of those emergencies. Make sure my air quotes are inside of my screen here. Right? Everything is not an emergency. And so when we can start to counteract some of those checklist things and say, these are the truly important, and yes, legitimate emergencies happen, and trying to tackle those as legitimate emergencies happen, but build those systems in place beforehand can help mitigate a lot of those supposed fake emergencies and really build the team where they feel empowered, because now your team can say, well, this hasn't gone to plan, but I know exactly how I should handle this because I've been trained and prepared for this.
Yeah. Or they can do it because now they've demonstrated that we've allowed them the freedom.
Yes, absolutely.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's good, Justin. I think when we talk about checklists, one of the questions I have been asking clients as the new year starts is, what are you going to stop doing? Because we always kind of think about the new year's got to always be about starting something new, about doing more. And, you know, we don't have, we've only got a limited amount of time. So one way to find more time is to stop doing things that don't matter. So this is a great time here to be thinking about, like, what have I been doing that's not adding any value here? So the last question, I think, is a question we all, as coaches, have, you know, experienced coaches have come to realize, is that when we coach people, whether it's in being a successful executive or related to HR issues or finance or process improvement issues, we start to learn more about the person we're coaching, and we develop this personal relationship with them. You know, that's really the foundation of a great coaching relationship, is trust. And you can't build trust with someone you don't know. So we tend to start to know our clients and get to know them personally. And through the process of trying to coach them to be successful, sometimes, you know, coaches that aren't so great just focus on the business results when there's the whole person we need to be dealing with. So how do you track the growth of the whole person and not just the business owner part?
Yeah, this is one of those benefits I think emerged out of those doctoral studies when it came to leadership health. Maybe I don't use quite that explicit, like, we're going to help you with leadership burnout language anymore, like I did when I got started. But that is still very much infused into the way in which I coach. And so not that these seven areas are necessarily specific to me, though I like to think I made up something unique and I wrote a paper on it. So it's got to be important, right? It's published. But so we really talk about seven areas of life. And the foundation to a strong, healthy life is calling. And it's being able to answer a question like, what on earth am I on earth for? And at a place where we work 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, if you're going to a job that you hate or isn't life-giving or isn't fulfilling, like, life is too short and you have far too many gifts. You've been given far too much in this world to waste your time at work. Like, I firmly believe that for every employee. And so if you need to start to ask those sorts of questions, why on earth am I on earth? And am I doing things that are life-giving, that are fulfilling? Am I reaching my full God-given potential? I don't find it at all a coincidence that, like, the number one time for suicide in America is Sunday night. Whether you want to look at pastors, which is where I kind of initially did research, or work employees, which has had some pretty strong follow-up research studies done as well. Like, people get to Sunday night and the thought of having to go to work again tomorrow is so overwhelming that suicide seems like a legitimate answer. And so we see this huge spike in Sunday night suicides. And it's just what a tragedy, right? Life is far too short. Life is much, much too meaningful and precious, and you have far too many gifts to waste them. And so we really start by saying, are you actually in a position where you are excited to wake up and go to work and invest your time and invest your energy and spend those precious gifts and moments you've been given? So number one, we start there. You are more than where you work, but we need to be crystal clear how all of these threads are going to start to tie together. Then we look at ideas of spiritual health. Again, what does it look like for you? And I've worked with the people from a wide variety of backgrounds, but they've all got a spiritual side, right? There is something about this world that is far too grand and far too mystical, and I can't explain it all. And I need to make sure that whatever my is the client concept of divine is, I'm connecting with that. That's important. Then we look at things like emotional health, right? I've known leaders that the example I use is, I don't play piano, but my wife does. So I know chopsticks, and she can, like, play these really fancy pieces and reach both ends of the keyboard. We've got different ranges on the piano, and our emotions work the same way. And maybe you guys know these leaders, like, they've got one note, right? I'm angry, and I'm going to keep pounding that one key every single time. And it gets exhausting to work with leaders whose only key is, I'm angry. I either don't care what you're saying, or I'm mad at you. Or you have leaders that have the full range of the emotional piano and can not only be in charge of their emotions, but control the emotions of the room. And, hey, Juanita, I noticed you're a bit quiet today. Is everything okay? Right? Like, they can read that room. That's good emotional intelligence. We talk about what it means to be an emotionally intelligent leader. So we cover your calling, we cover your spiritual care, we cover emotional care, but then we cover things like physical and mental health. Are you getting exercise? Are you eating good food? Are you stimulating your brain? Are you attending conferences and reading books and whatever it looks like for you to get better at your craft? Are you engaged in those processes? And we kind of take that big lump sum right there, those four, and say those are the internal dynamics of leadership health. Those are the things that maybe not necessarily everybody sees that you do, but everybody experiences. Because once you've experienced them, we're in that external world. And so we talk about a couple of things in the external world, and we say, you have relational health. Is my relationship with my spouse or my kids or my parents or my community? Again, you kind of get to define that, but do you have strong relationships that support you? It's part of what this mastermind is designed to do. I need to be in relationships with people who I can ask the tough questions of and get honest feedback, even if I don't want it. So we talk about relational health, and then we kind of cap off this pyramid, and I termed it, as I was studying at the time, finances, right? I don't think you can be a great leader if you're burdened by debt and worried about paying all your bills, right? And so there's something about financial freedom that contributes to good leadership. But then I kind of conclude all this by saying, but it's really people with good finances don't necessarily have to be rich. It's the attitude behind it of generosity, right? And so I only feel like you can be truly generous if you've addressed all of these areas in your life. You got to know why you're here. You got to take care of your body. You got to take care of your emotions. You need good food and good sleep. You need good relationships. You need your finances in order. And once you've addressed all of that, then you as a leader can step out and say, now I can give my wisdom away, my knowledge away, my skills away. I can give my finances away. Like whatever it looks like, you can live this truly abundant and generous life. And so while I may not necessarily week in and week out with my clients, keep reminding them of these seven steps, that really emerged out of this background of leadership health, right? And so it's kind of maybe not explicit in the coaching process anymore, but it's very much woven in of, okay, hey, we've talked 3 or 4 weeks about what it means to be a good business owner. And we've probably got some more work to do. I sense you want to lean into that, but I have to remind you, when you're done on the phone with me, you're going to go home to your kids. I need to make sure you're a good dad, right? And so it's me challenging my clients sometimes to just say, I refuse to just only think about your business practices. Because you can't work 24/7. And so part of that is faithful, I think, ingrained in me from this study, but really looking at these whole people and saying, hey, have we actually addressed this issue? Do we know what some of your emotional triggers are? That way you go to your employees and say, hey, by the way, I figured out when you use this word, I get upset. So let's find a different word to use so you can call my stuff, right? I'll never forget my wife. I'll wrap up with this, but I learned that one the hard way. So we were having Elise and I were having a conversation, and she said, I don't like it when you call me sweetie. And I was like, oh, well, why is that? She goes, because you only ever call me sweetie when you're mad at me. Okay, you know, like, so how good of it for her was it that she felt comfortable enough to say that, right? And I needed to hear that because I didn't know that's what I did. But thank goodness she told me, so now I can avoid calling her that. Right. So it's part of that awareness. So we intentionally focus on each of those seven areas of health to make sure that you emerge out of this coaching relationship, not just a better business owner, but a better and more healthy person.
And probably a good result of your being a good coach to yourself is that you probably don't call her sweetie anymore.
I do not. No.
Positive.
I value that relationship too much.
Yeah, exactly. And you learn from your good coaching that, you know, you better follow your own advice. So.
Yeah. So as we've had these three interviews here with us, I think what we're really trying to get to with the mastermind group we're looking to put together here in Bakersfield is that much like a coach, this mastermind group will help you see the things you don't see. And maybe tell you the things nobody else is going to tell you, and then even better yet, help you deal with those things. Mm-hmm. So I'll let Justin have the last word here. But before he does, reach out to us and tell us what struggles you're going through. I've had a few people do this already to tell us about, like, what are you struggling with that you can't share with other people you work with, especially if you're a leader or a business owner, because what we're really trying to put together is a community of like-minded people that just want to do like Justin's talking about, use their God-given talents to improve this world, to make this world a better place, and to hopefully enjoy going to work more often. Because like I had talked about in my chat a few days ago, we spend 2/3 of our adult life at work. And who wants to spend two-thirds of their adult life doing something you'd rather not do? You know, that's my definition of misery, right? So, I think that's what we're really trying to do, is help people smile more when they go to work and deal with the challenges that keep them from smiling. So Justin, send us out with something to help put a few smiles on the faces that are listening or going to be watching this recording later.
Yeah, absolutely. The work you do matters. And I know that, I firmly believe that. I was doing some training a couple of months ago, virtually, right? We're all staring at Zoom screens, and I'm looking for feedback, and it's just not the same as being in person, but it works, right? So I'm interacting with this group of leaders, and we log off the Zoom call, and somebody shoots me a text message and said, "Thank you for sharing that. I needed to hear it. I didn't say anything in the broadcast because my boss was watching, and I just can't voice myself around him." And I just, like, how sad, right? Like, so if somebody hasn't encouraged you, the work you do matters. Your gift, your presence, your abilities, whatever it is that you wake up each day and put your hands to do, to be a blessing to yourself, to your family, to your world, to your community, those things matter. And one of the reasons I very intentionally target small businesses is because they're by and large the people that say, "I was born in this community, I care about this community, I want to give back to this community." And those are the type of people that I, in my private practice, work with. And so, like, 2020 was hard. Who knows what 2021 is going to bring, though initial returns aren't that it'll be much better. But just, like, in the midst of this hard time, make sure you're establishing those good routines. Self-care is not selfish. And then find a way someday, every day, to give back and put a smile on somebody else's face. And if you can do those things, your life will be better and those around you will be impacted by it. And that's really what it will take to start a movement and turn this whole thing around.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Well, thanks. We appreciate everybody chatting with us, and look forward to sharing more in the future. So like I said, reach out to any one of us to talk about your ideas, your challenges, your problems, and how we can start to develop this community of folks to help each other grow and learn and smile more when we go to work, and even better yet, to smile more when we go home. Because it really, honestly, that's the big thing. Like, when you leave work with a smile, you're more likely to come home with a smile. And you won't have to call your wife sweetie anymore either, right?
That's right. She's going to watch us later, and I'm sure I'll get in trouble even for sharing the story.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, okay. I can echo that, because I don't like being called sweetie either. So yeah. I know exactly what Elise is feeling. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you guys. And watch for the replay and the announcements about the upcoming mastermind. We'll see you guys on the next one.
Great. Have a great